Hello, welcome to another episode of Walker Wisdom. Today I am joined with the curator of the Bowdoin College Museum of Art and the previous associate curator of global indigenous art at the Spencer Museum of Art at the University of Kansas.
You got it.
Welcome to the show, Casey.
Thanks, Andrew. Great to be here.
Let's start firing these questions.
Yeah.
How would you describe your role at the BCMA?
So my role at the BCMA as curator is to lead the curatorial team. That includes our curatorial assistant and our postdoctoral fellow, as well as working with our senior consulting curator whose name is Laura Sprague, and our curator of the ancient art collection. A lot of what I do is propose and develop exhibitions that will be on view in our galleries. I also work quite a bit with faculty and students to co-curate exhibitions in our Becker Gallery and other spaces. And since I arrived last August, I've also taken a more major role in working with classes that come to visit the BCMA in our Zuckert seminar room and in our galleries to learn about different topics through art in the collection.
How did you find your way to the BCMA?
It's a great question. I grew up in New England and spent a lot of summers in Maine and had regularly visited the museum growing up. And was just always very impressed with what it was able to do, with the diversity and strength of its collections. In graduate school, I had an opportunity to work at a campus museum at Brown University. And then my first professional role was also at a campus art museum. And those experiences led me to really firmly believe that working in academic museums on college campuses where I could engage with students and with the sort of teaching and learning and research that happens in higher education was something really important to me. My previous role was at a huge research university, and I was really looking to become part of a smaller liberal arts context, working more closely with students and faculty. So when this position opened up, I thought it was just a fantastic opportunity to see if I would be a good fit for working with these collections. So that was how I found my way here specifically.
Mm-hmm. In the initial stages of your career, did you envision art playing such a major role?
No, it was actually a complete surprise. And, you know, my role to the BCMA was fairly straightforward, but my role into museums and art museums was really not a straight line. I did my undergraduate at NYU and double majored in anthropology and linguistics and decided to immediately pursue my MA and PhD in anthropology, where I focused on archaeology, specifically pre-Columbian architecture. And I thought, at least for the first half of graduate school, that I was going to become an archaeology professor, run an excavation. But as I mentioned, I had this opportunity to be an intern at the Hafenreffer Museum of Anthropology, and that was really where my love of museums was born. I loved the fact that I could still engage in really rigorous scholarship, but also speak to audiences of, you know, all different walks of life and sort of different entry points into the material. But it wasn't an art museum. And that really took me by surprise. Again, in graduate school, I had opportunities to be involved in an exhibition that opened at the Peabody Essex Museum up in Salem that was looking at ancient Maya art. I also had an opportunity to work in the Department of the Arts of Africa, Oceania, and the Americas at the Metropolitan Museum of Art. And, you know, that's where some of that initial exposure to art came in. My role at the Spencer was kind of a match made in heaven because a lot of the collections that I oversaw had previously been part of an anthropology museum collection, but the Spencer was seeking to integrate it more fully into an art museum context. And so they were specifically looking for someone who could kind of translate between these different disciplines and different museums. So that was really where I was so fortunate to be able to start exploring more the world of art and particularly working with contemporary artists. So that, yeah, it was not a straight line. It was really unexpected. I always enjoyed going to art museums, but really did not think that I would end up being in an art museum.
Mm-hmm. And how has that changed how you curate exhibitions today?
Yeah, I think that one of the things that I always keep in mind is I'm not an art historian by training, but I've worked very closely with art historians my entire career. And coming from anthropology, there was very much a strong emphasis on visual culture and material culture, but with a slightly different focus. And so I think some of the questions that I ask of the works of art might be slightly different from sort of a connoisseurial perspective. But I think also looking at, you know, big questions about the human experience and how art can illuminate that, I think, is one kind of difference. And then I've also just had exposure to artistic traditions that have not generally been a strong emphasis in many art history programs, at least in the United States. So, you know, Native American art, African art, even oceanic art often are taught as part of interdisciplinary programs like African studies or Native American or indigenous studies. Mm-hmm. And so thinking about how those have and have not been integrated into art historical canons, mm-hmm. how they have and have not been part of art museum collections is something that I'm constantly interrogating and trying to think about critically.
Do you find yourself collaborating with another department within the BCMA or outside of it particularly often?
Yeah, sure. So inside the BCMA, we're a relatively small team. You know, one of the things I didn't touch on in my first question in terms of what I do at the BCMA, I work very closely with our registrar's office in documenting and cataloging both new works of art that we're bringing into the collection through purchase or that are offered as gifts, as well as working with that team to improve our database records and catalogs. So, you know, when new research is conducted, I'm always working with them to make sure that our records are updated. I work with our communications team, you know, any writing, you know, whether it's labels or something for a website, a press release, I'm always working with that communications team. And then, of course, our co-directors who are very involved in all aspects of, you know, what we do at the BCMA. We work very closely together to think about sort of bigger issues that are facing the museum, how we can make a more efficient workplace, how we can make sure that the projects that we're taking on are relevant for the academic life of the college, but also, you know, producing rigorous scholarship in and of ourselves. So there's really no one at the BCMA that I'm not working with pretty closely. And then outside the BCMA, I really am one of the prime points of contact for faculty who are interested in working with us, whether that is, you know, a faculty member in art history that comes to the museum multiple times every semester and has been doing so for years and know exactly what they want, to a new faculty member, you know, who's arriving to campus, who's wondering, how can I use the museum in my teaching? So really having an opportunity to speak with faculty and brainstorm ways that they can incorporate the museum and its collections into what they do is part and parcel of what I do. And then I really enjoy the opportunities I get to work with students, whether it's our interns or working with students on co-curated shows in our Becker Gallery, which I'm doing right now. So
that's exciting.
Yeah.
I think one question that a lot of people still don't know, I still don't know, from even though I've been here for 2 months, is what is the like timeline of an exhibition and how does that even get started?
Sure. So I would say that there's no one answer. Many of our exhibitions are years in the making. So our temporary exhibitions that often happen on the lower level of the museum galleries usually require years of advanced planning, especially if there's going to be an associated publication. So there needs to be time to do the research, to do the writing, to select the works of art, to work with external partners or faculty members as necessary, and to work with the team internally to make sure that our preparators know what's being hung, they can mat and frame works of art, they can build mounts. Many of our other exhibitions, I would say, are more on a 1 to 2 year timeline. And the exhibition proposal process is something that we're sort of looking at and reviewing. COVID hit museums like it hit every other institution really hard. So I experienced this in my previous role, and I kind of walked into it here, where there were a lot of projects that were delayed as a result of museums being closed, not all of the staff being able to work in person. So right now, we're sort of just starting to come out of that backlog of projects and look at our exhibition calendar a year or two ahead of time. There is sort of an exhibition proposal form that is completed for ideas for projects that's reviewed by a committee at the museum. Faculty are also twice a year invited to, and students, to submit proposals for Becker Gallery exhibitions. So we'll actually be announcing our next request for proposals in just a few weeks. And so those proposals are evaluated to see, you know, why is this exhibition important for us to do now? We also try to ensure that at any given time, there's a good balance of works that are on view. So different media, we don't want everything to be contemporary. We don't want everything to be, you know, early modern. So trying to make sure that we have some balance is really important to us as we, you know, consider what the exhibition agenda will be at any given time. And then sometimes there are projects that might emerge from just casual conversations. Oh, this, you know, I'm really interested in this topic. And all of a sudden it kind of grows organically. And then that formal exhibition proposal is submitted.
How would you say your work-life balance is? A loaded question, perhaps.
Yeah, I mean, I think that anyone who is entering higher education and or museums is doing it because it's a true vocation. It's a calling and it's a passion, and it's something that we enjoy doing. I have a young child and a family, and one of the things I think that's great about the BCMA is that there's actually opportunities like, you know, the family programs that, Andrew, I know you've been very involved in, that there's yes. opportunities for me to actually involve my family in the work that I do here. So I think that's something that's always really fun, that I work in a place where on a Saturday I can bring my family to see what I've been up to or what my colleagues have been up to. I also, you know, I think with work like this where the ideas are always churning, I don't just turn off at 5 o'clock when I leave the office. Ideas come at breakfast or, you know, on a bike ride. One thing that I have tried to do, especially following the pandemic when schedules were so chaotic, is really try to reserve that like 5:30 to 7:30 or so every day to be with my family and to be really present for dinner and for a walk, you know. And then if there's work to be done in the evening, sometimes I will take that on. But I do very deliberately draw some boundaries when I can on my evenings and weekends.
What surprised you most as you settled into your position here, as well as your initial experience with an art museum at the Spencer?
Yeah, so in many ways, I mean, there are so many similarities between campus museums. We have a lot of the same opportunities. We face a lot of the same challenges. But the context on Bowdoin's campus with, you know, student body of 1,800, I think there were over 20,000 students at KU. So very, very different. One of the things that was the most delightful surprise to me was not only how invested faculty and students were in the museum, but how much ownership they took over. So I was immediately struck when I started meeting people, how they would refer to it as our museum. And I thought that was really beautiful. It wasn't the BCMA or your museum where you work. It was really the sense of it being part of the campus. And, you know, as I've settled in, I've really absolutely seen that to be true. People really have strong opinions, and it comes from this place of being, I think, really invested in what the museum is doing. And so I think, which is not to say people were not invested in the Spencer when I was at the University of Kansas. It was just a much bigger place, and I think there was a slightly different dynamic in terms of how that sense of ownership that people felt over the collections and over the galleries. So I think it's really beautiful.
In your many years of experience, have you seen a change in the way museums operate?
Yes. You know, my background has been primarily working with collections of Indigenous art, which raises a whole host of questions. Yes. That I think even within the last decade, the frequency of questions being asked about the role of museums in stewarding or curating Indigenous material culture, Indigenous human remains in some cases, I've seen some of those critical questions being asked more frequently, and I've continued to see museums grapple with their origins, their specific institutional histories in ways that were not, they were not being considered in sort of a field-wide systematic way, the way they are now. When I see calls for proposals for conferences, for instance, you know, there are panels now that I don't think that you would have seen 10 or even 15 years ago. So I think that there is a lot of grappling and reckoning with what is a museum, what is its role. One of the areas that I think is also really exciting, so many of these calls for, I'm putting up air quotes here, decolonization in museums have focused really on exhibitions and programs, things that are very public facing. But there are also conversations unfolding about more inclusive ways of caring for collections and storing collections. You know, again, coming from the indigenous perspective, the best practices for Western-based museums focus on conservation and preservation in perpetuity, making sure that things are safe and dry and all of the things that we would want to ensure that objects remain available for future generations. But that does come into conflict with other types of beliefs and practices. And so some of the conversations that I think are really interesting are how can museums start thinking about more inclusive ways of caring for their collections that both uphold professional standards, but also take into account the fact that there are different ways for caring for objects. And I don't think that those conversations don't get quite as much airtime, I think, as, you know, diversifying exhibitions and having more inclusive programming.
What is the most rewarding part of your role?
It's a good question. I don't think I could pick a single thing. Mm-hmm. You know, one thing I will say is I am never bored. I think in general, one of the things that I've always loved about curatorial roles is you work in a lot of different areas. And so when I'm feeling burnt out from doing a lot of heavy research or academic writing, I can go think about improving collections catalogs or database records. It's a little bit more rote. When I'm feeling like, oh my gosh, I've been staring at a screen alone in my office all day, great, I get to go meet with a class of students from the chemistry department and I get to put on a completely different hat. And so I think curatorial work is so rewarding because you're not pigeonholed into doing just one thing. But by far, the most rewarding thing for me about working in museums, apart from the great people I get to interact with, is I can take art breaks whenever I want, whether that's just walking through the galleries. And as a curator, having access to works that are in collection storage, I mean, that's something that not many people are able to do. And I'm forever grateful that every day I am learning new things, seeing things I've never seen before. I can't imagine anything better, really.
Just a question for our museum pre-professionals. Mm-hmm. What is one word of advice you would give to those interested in getting into museum work?
Does it have to be just one word? Or like just literally a word.
Okay. Just like whatever advice.
I think that a lot of programs and professional advice geared towards students interested in museums tend to focus on curatorial roles or maybe collections management roles. But I would say reach out to museum professionals, especially on campuses. Like that is part of what we're here to do. And realize that there are many paths and points of entry into the museum as a profession. I mean, I'm a case in point. I was excavating pyramids in Guatemala and here I am. But there are also a lot of roles that are vitally important to museums functioning. You know, working in exhibition design or preparation where you're building mounts, you're doing the art handling, that's a really viable career path. It's something that I actually see a lot of artists and makers become involved in. Leaves time for them to pursue their own artistic practice. People who write grants, people who have MBAs and background in project management, photographers. I mean, increasingly museums are starting to have staff photographers for collections photography and events photography. So just, I think, acknowledging that museums are more than just curators and directors or even educators, that there are a lot of behind-the-scenes career paths that require skills that you can equally get from being an English major or an art history major or a chemistry major. And, you know, so think broadly. And I think some of the really interesting work that are coming out of museums are from those who have embraced staff members who are coming from different backgrounds and who have different skill sets.
Well, thank you so much for coming to Walker Wisdom. I've had such a great time talking with you.
Yeah, thank you, Andrew. This is so great.
Yes. Thank you so much for listening.